and welcome to the Dream Season Podcast, an oral history of the 1989-90 UConn men's basketball season, also known as the Dream Season. This is Episode 12, the Big East Tournament. After the dust settled following the end of the Big East regular season, the UConn Huskies were co-champions with Syracuse and the number two seed in the upcoming Big East Tournament at Madison Square Garden. The Huskies would open the day of quarterfinal matchups on Friday, March 9th at noon against the number 7 seed Seton Hall Pirates. Before the postseason tipped off, however, there was still some regular season business to attend to. On Monday, UConn dropped 4 spots to number 8 in the latest Associated Press poll. Also that same Monday, Nadav Hennefeld was named Big East Rookie of the Year. He was the first UConn player to win the award since Earl Kelly won it following the 1982-83 season. Hennefeld was joined on the All-Rookie team by fellow freshman Scott Burrell. Nadav was also named to the All-Big East third team, along with Tate George. Chris Smith was a member of the All-Big East second team. The 1989-90 Huskies were only the second team in Big East history to win or share the regular season championship and not have at least one player make the All-Big East first team. The 1982-83 Boston College Eagles were the other team. Syracuse's Derek Coleman was named the conference's Player of the Year. As expected, Jim Calhoun was named Big East Coach of the Year, as voted by his fellow Big East coaches. Calhoun, who couldn't vote for himself, said he voted for Lou Carnesecca, as St. John's finished only one game behind Georgetown and had played most of the season without their star forward Jason Williams due to a broken foot. Calhoun later joked, "Actually, I should have voted for the travel agent who got me my ticket to Israel."
Using those predictions as a challenge, they responded, that is, the team and the coach responded to that by establishing a new school record for the most wins in a season, most wins in Big East conference play, and of course they have claimed their first share of the Big East conference play title. They can also look forward to their first NCAA tournament bid since becoming a charter member of the conference in 1979. So it gives me a great deal of pleasure this morning, and again an honor, to announce the Chrysler Big East Conference Coach of the Year to a man who has joined an elite group of Division I coaches in achieving the 300-win plateau. And I give you no one else but Jim Calhoun of the Huskies.
Coach of the Year was not an easy thing to talk about in many, many ways, because it really isn't, and I know it's cliche-ish and sometimes corny, and I'm not very corny, but it is really us. By that I mean the Huskies. When I told the kids that last year when maybe someone felt they should be on the rookie team or someone felt they should be on this team or that team or whatever should happen, I said, you know, that's not the deal. The deal, very simply, is when we win, everybody gets rewarded. And I've preached that to our kids time and time again.
Publicly, Calhoun says he preached to his kids about not worrying about recognition, but Chris Smith remembers it differently.
Oh, that definitely motivated me. And even Coach couldn't believe that. Coach was, you know, I remember Coach really being upset about that. He felt like I was a first team, all Big East. And, he was like, Chris, you really got to show yourself. You know, you got to show yourself to these guys. And the good thing is that Coach gave me that confidence. He gave me the ball. He wanted me to score. He wanted me to shoot. And it gave me that push, man, because I felt like I was first team.
Calhoun was also named one of 10 finalists for the National Coach of the Year Award, which would be announced during the weekend of the Final Four. Once the hardware was collected, the focus turned back to matters on the court. The Huskies had not fared well in the first 10 years of the Big East Tournament. In 1980, they won their very first game as the number 4 seed, defeating the 5th-seeded Boston College Eagles to advance to the semifinals, where they would lose the number 1 seed Syracuse 92-61. Over the next 7 years, UConn would lose their first game in the tournament, sometimes in heartbreaking fashion, sometimes in blowouts. In 1988, the Huskies survived the dreaded 8-9 game for the first time, defeating Providence 75-62. They promptly fell in their next game to number 1 seed at Pittsburgh 75-58. Last season, the 7-seeded Huskies fell to the number 2 seed and eventual national runners-up, Seton Hall, 74-66. In the first 10 years of the Big East tournament, only 3 teams had won the championship. Georgetown 6 times, and both Syracuse and St. John's twice. Only 2 other teams, Boston College and Villanova, had even reached the championship game. Jim Calhoun wasn't looking past this year's Seton Hall team, but he was hoping that his UConn team would advance to Saturday and the chance to play on CBS. UConn had never appeared on CBS and hasn't appeared on a national non-cable network since 1981, when they defeated St. John's 69-68 on a Corney Thompson 15-foot jump shot with 8 seconds left on NBC. Said Calhoun, quote, "We'd love just to get on CBS on Saturday. We have no pretenses about who we are. We feel we are a good young team, and that would help our recruiting long term," end quote. This would be the third matchup between UConn and Seton Hall this season. UConn won at Seton Hall 79-76 on January 13th, and at Gamble 79-57 less than 2 weeks ago. However, the Pirates did finish the season strong, winning at St. John's and losing to Syracuse by just 2 points. All of the pressure off the court was on the Huskies, but it wouldn't take long for the Pirates to succumb to the Huskies' pressure on the court. Scott Burrell joined the starting lineup for the first time since January 2nd at St. John's, replacing Lyman DePriest. Calhoun felt he had worked himself back to 100% following his knee surgery. The UConn offense was a bit sluggish to start the game, missing 8 of the first 10 shots. Nadav Hennefeld failed to hit the rim on his first 3 field goal attempts. But Seton Hall was having problems of their own, turning the ball over 8 times in the first 8 minutes. The result was a fairly close game for much of the first half. UConn led most of the way, but every time the lead approached double digits, the Pirates would answer. That changed at the end of the first half.
Connecticut now 14 of 17 at the foul line here in the first half. 8-point lead. 49.6 seconds remaining in the half. John Gwynn comes in for UConn, replacing Lyman DePriest. And Tate George will put it in play for the Huskies. George, big point guard, 6'5", getting it outside to Burrell.
Yeah, the thing is he wants the ball, too. He's been in this situation before. Just goes and gets it and takes charge the way you have to. Spread offense now for Connecticut.
Well, they can run it down to about 4 seconds in the first half because they were 30 seconds on the shot clock and 34 left in the half as the clock is running.
So important to execute in these situations. Don't turn it over. Be good with the ball. Jim Calhoun's got a 3-guard lineup out there as you see the game clock in the lower right-hand corner.
Now, Connecticut will have to shoot it before it gets to 4 seconds. There's your time remaining in the first half. George, Chris Smith, he'll take the shot and tuck the shot. 10 seconds to go in the half. It is UConn by 10, their biggest lead of the first half. They're on a 6-0 run.
Gotta get rid of it.
Cooper will fire it up and doesn't get it. And UConn is up by 10 at halftime at Madison Square Garden. Well, UConn had pushed it up to as many as 9. It got back to 4. Now they're back up by 10. That's the end of the first half. Madison Square Garden, our score, Connecticut leading 36-26. We'll be back after these local messages.
With UConn's offense struggling, they once again relied on their defense to take control of the game, notching 10 steals in the first half. Chris Smith, not feeling 100% thanks to the flu, led all Huskies in scoring in the half with 14, while Tate George had 13. The Huskies did not let up to start the second half, going on a 10-4 run to lead 46-30 with 13 minutes left in the game. As the halfway point of the second half neared, the UConn lead increased to 17 at 50-33. Seton Hall went on a 6-0 run to trim the lead to 11 when George stepped up once again.
Murray Williams to inbounds for the Huskies, way out, throws it into the backcourt to Tate George. The Hall on a 6-0 run to try to get back into this thing right now.
Well, they've got to do it now. There's still 9 minutes to go, and they're only down 11. Oh, good luck.
Beautiful. Beautiful feed. Tate George finds Rod Sellers. Drew the defense to him. Sellers all alone under the hoop.
He's doing it all in this game. Steals, assists, and points.
Well, he's a senior, and he is the captain.
Seton Hall would never get closer than 15 points the rest of the way.
Down to 30 seconds to play. Connecticut will advance to the semifinal round against the winner of the Georgetown-Providence game. The P.J. Carlissimo Seton Hall team, the season is over. The Jim Calhoun's team, Ronnie Perry, the season may well be just beginning.
It could be. They're off on the right foot today with a win in the first round. It's so important to get through this game. Jim Calhoun will empty the bench
and bring in all his reserves. 5 players are coming in. Actually, now let's see. But this Smith at the line, so 4 will come in. Smith's replacement will have to wait. And Seton Hall empties the bench as well. And the University of Connecticut Huskies, who have had a Cinderella season going from nowhere last year, 7th in the conference, up to the conference co-championship this year, will win their opening round game in the Big East tournament. Big time. They lead it by right now by 16 points, but that really doesn't tell the difference in the ball game, Ronnie. It's been it's been a 16-15 point lead most of the second half, but it's played like a 20-point lead, and they were so confident and comfortable with the lead.
Yeah, I mean, you never really thought that Seton Hall was threatening Connecticut in this game. Chris Smith was dominant in the first half, Tate George, and overall the defense has been outstanding.
The final score was UConn 76, Seton Hall 58. The Steel Curtain defense dominated, forcing 24 Seton Hall turnovers and setting a Big East tournament record with 17 steals. Tate George played 34 minutes, scored a season-high 20 points, had 6 steals, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and committed only 2 turnovers. His 20 points were the second most in his career. He scored 24 points in his sophomore season and hadn't reached the 20-point mark again until this game. George's fellow co-captain Steve Peichel on Tate's performance, quote, "That's the best I've ever seen him play. He had 4 assists, but he could have had 10. They missed layups, got fouled on dunks. Everyone looked a little stagnant. He was the key," end quote. His coach agreed, quote, "He was magnificent. He was in control and confident. He was looking to get to places that we were begging him to try to get to before," end quote. Chris Smith added 16 points, while Nadav Henefeld, despite his shooting woes, finished with 10 points, 5 steals, and 5 assists. Henefeld's father, Zaev, surprised Nadav earlier in the week by flying in from Israel to watch his son play in New York. Calhoun assumed that Nadav was nervous playing in front of his dad, but Nadav dismissed that idea, saying, quote, "There was no reason, just bad shots. If it's an off day, it's an off day," end quote. UConn's reward for advancing in the tournament? The Georgetown Hoyas, who had defeated Providence 78-77. The Huskies would be looking to redeem themselves after losing by 20 points to the Hoyas in their most recent matchup on February 28th. In that game, UConn's offense struggled, and their defense failed to contain Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo, who combined for 35 points and 26 rebounds. The same starting five from the Seton Hall game took the court for the Huskies. Rod Sellers, Nadav Henefeld, and Scott Burrell in the front court, with Chris Smith and Tate George at the guard position. With the game tied at just 2 minutes into the game, disaster seemingly struck the Huskies.
Calhoun has got to have that move down on the blocks. Well, this is going to be a tough afternoon for his big man. He gives away about 5 or 6 inches per man underneath, and he knows that he's going to have to push and shove and get Mutombo and Alonzo Mourning off the blocks. They were out working on that in the garden about 10 o'clock this morning.
Brent, is what's so tough is that their size. Uh-oh, Sellers is down and holding his knee.
They have lost Sellers here in the first minute and a half.
And he is really in some pain.
Let's take a look at what happened here, Billy.
Cut through, pushing against Alonzo. His leg just collapsed on him. Brent, he tried to hold off Alonzo Mourning, who has tremendous upper body strength, and you can see that his left knee, which has already given him problems throughout his career, just collapsed on him. He's in considerable pain. He moved into the starting center spot after the 12th game this year, gave this team the quickness that they needed to continue their work on the press. Now watch his left knee collapse as he's trying to hold off. There it is. It just caves in underneath him as he tried to hold off Alonzo Mourning, who has superior strength. Oh, nice gesture by Alonzo now going down there, patting Sellers, because there certainly was nothing that Alonzo did that was not in good sportsmanship on that particular play. Despite that huge brace that Sellers plays with, you could just see the knee collapse under that pressure.
Well, that puts the pressure squarely on 7'1 sophomore Danny Cyrulik out of Williamsville, New York. He will move into the UConn lineup here in the early going, and you can see Henefeld doing a little coaching on the floor. That's one of his values for this Husky team. He played on the Israeli national team, and he's extremely experienced in international competition. And let's hope that is not serious, but it did not look good, did it, Billy?
No, it did not. He had no way to go. It's just one of those things, kind of like you see in football, Brent, a lot when a guy's leg gets locked in the turf, and he has no way for it to slide out. That's what happened to Sellers on that play.
Sellers was quickly ruled out for the rest of the game, and his status going forward had yet to be determined. Early on, both teams exchanged the lead several times. UConn led 9-2 after a Chris Smith steal and layup.
On
on the steal. Smith comes back. He has George on his right. Rolls it in, and that's three steals and five turnovers by the Hoyas against this fabulous Connecticut defense.
But Georgetown answered right back, taking a 13-11 lead on a Mark Tillman jumper. The CBS announcing duo of Brent Musburger and Billy Packer were impressed with their first impressions of this UConn team.
This is a terrific-looking Connecticut defense. They are all over the ball, and it is Huskies ball out of bounds. I don't think, Billy, we have seen a zone as active as this all year long. Calhoun has these kids playing with a lot of heart.
They do have a very active zone, and their physical nature of this club with the quickness that they have and the good overall size allows them to play it extremely well.
Billy, I think we can see why this Husky team has excited all the followers up in the state of Connecticut. This is a fun ball club to watch.
It really is, and it's not a fun team to play against if you're an opponent.
UConn took the lead back at 14-13 after a Tate George three-pointer, but the Hoyas, led by Tillman, looked to be taking control. They eventually stretched their lead to 8 points at 25-17 before the Huskies tied it back up at 27 with 2:40 left in the half. With UConn down three with just under 10 seconds left in the half, Nadav Hennefeld missed the second half of a 1-1, giving the ball back to Georgetown. Unlike several games earlier this season, this time UConn was on the other end of a buzzer beater before the half, as Antoine Stoudemire hit a 24-foot shot as the horn sounded to give the Hoyas a 36-30 halftime lead. For the half, the Huskies shot only 37% from the floor, while the Hoyas shot 59%. UConn's defense played well, grabbing six steals, but struggled to contain Mark Tillman, who had 16 points in the half. Dan Cerulik filled in admirably for the injured Sellers, posting 6 points and six rebounds. Chris Smith led the Huskies with 10 points at the break. On the season, UConn was 0-5 and losing at halftime. Stoudemire started the second half as he ended the first, draining another three-pointer to push Georgetown's lead to 9, 39-30. The Huskies responded with a 7-0 run to trim the deficit to 2 points, but the Hoyas countered with an 8-0 run of their own, capped off by another Mark Tillman three.
A three for Tillman, and now that's 19 points for the Hoyas leading scorer. He's had a great season for Georgetown. He's a fine young man when you talk to him. Friendly, outgoing. He and Mutombo got two great personalities.
Great take by Smith, but I'll tell you what, it is noticeable right now to me that Connecticut has lost the zip in their legs that they had early on in this ballgame.
The score was Georgetown 47, UConn 39, with 13:08 left in the game. And Billy Packer was right. The Huskies were a little sluggish and needed a spark. John Gwynn, Murray Williams, and Terrena Walker joined Chris Smith and Scott Burrell on the floor and looked to spur on the Huskies. Gwynn, Williams, and Walker were core components of the blue team, the five players who wore the blue side of their reversible practice jerseys and were tasked with guarding the starters in practice every day. This was their moment to shine, and shine they did. UConn held Georgetown scoreless over the next 8 minutes and 10 seconds. During that span, they outscored the Hoyas 14-0.
Gwynn has really been held under. Has a guy that explodes for over 10 a game. Here he is taking a shot, first one today. He did not score in the first half. Jim Calhoun likes to count on him for double-figure scoring, although he's playing under 20 minutes a game.
So both coaches using their bench. Walker on the inside, muscling in, makes it a three-point game. Even though the Hoyas have dominated in a lot of areas, they have not pulled away from this team.
That's because defense doesn't ever leave you.
And there it is, a perfect example. Gwynn coming up with a magnificent steal for the Huskies. Hoyas lead still at three, 9:44. Not taking advantage of all the opportunities that have been presented to here today.
And you see, they go back to their man-to-man. John just Thompson gives you so many defensive looks to adjust to.
Shifts inside to Burrell. Gets it to fall there in the paint. That's his first field goal in the second half.
He's a winner, though.
If Burrell gets his shot to fall, this could be some Donnybrook. Inside now to Jefferson. He shifts back to Bryant.
And you see how much quicker the defense has become with those substitutions of Williams and Walker in the game. Now they're getting all over the ball the way they were in the first half.
I'm surprised that Thompson doesn't come back with Mutombo to help out. This is a little bit smaller Connecticut team. Goes over for the Huskies.
And what Jim Calhoun has been able to do with his club just down one, he's resting George, he rested Hennepel, and he rested Cirilla. So he's going to be fresh, and here comes your man Mutombo back, Brent.
And Hennepel is back, Billy, just as you spoke about him, too.
And they're back fresh. That was a gutty move by Jim Calhoun, and it paid off for him.
Connecticut can take the lead. They trail it by a point at the 7:40 mark. Georgetown did not put them away.
Tillman, after about a minute rest, is going to have to come back in the game. I think Connecticut's going down the last 5 minutes fresher than Georgetown.
And Connecticut leads.
And Connecticut takes the lead, 48-47.
They were down by as many as 9 points, and they've taken a one-point lead, 48-47. Morning is now out with Mutombo, the man in the hole for the Hoyas.
Boy, some great chess playing by these two coaches in regard to substitutions this last 12 minutes.
There's such a size disadvantage. They've got to get it in low. Bad pass, and Connecticut anticipated it. They couldn't get the ball to Mutombo.
You talk about valuable minutes. Walker has done a sensational job in about the 8 or so minutes he's played in this game.
Here he comes. Stepped in aggressively, improved his shooting distance. Husky mania, you gotta love it.
1-3-1 zone now by Georgetown. Kempe in that middle.
The three. John Gwynn. Gwynn goes after it, knocked it out of bounds.
And Brent, do you see what Jim Calhoun is doing? He's kept Tate George out of this ball game. He has Burrell out of this ball game. So he's saving them as long as he can, so they come into the last 3-4 minutes really fresh. He's getting great play off the bench. Williams and Walker and Gwynn, just a super job.
The run ended when Mark Tillman banked in a three-pointer with 4:50 left in the game to make the score UConn 53, Georgetown 50. The Hoyas had inched to within 1 point at 53-52 with 4:25 left. Scott Burrell, a 58% free throw shooter, proceeded to hit four straight, the last two with a minute 20 left, making the score 57-52, UConn. With 44.3 seconds left, Chris Smith made two more free throws, pushing the lead back up to 7. Following his second free throw, Smith iced the game for good.
A 7-point lead.
Now it's a matter, no foul. Just tough perimeter defense, take away the three. That's it.
NFL rejects it. Here comes Smith. And he'll come up to the line. Score the field goal. Connecticut will put away Georgetown today.
Hennepel blocked a Stoudemire three-point attempt, which led to a Chris Smith layup and foul with just 33 seconds left. Smith made the free throw to complete the three-point play and increased the lead to 10 points. After the final seconds played out, the final score was UConn 65, Georgetown 60. The story of the game was clearly the 8-minute, 10-second stretch in the second half when the blue team held the Hoyas to without a point. The UConn defense held Georgetown at 25.8% shooting from the field in the second half. The Hoyas only converted 8 of the 31 shot attempts. The Hoyas turned the ball over 19 times compared to the Huskies' 8. Without Rod Sellers to help, Dan Cerulic and Terrano Walker held Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo to just 16 points and 17 rebounds. Walker played a season-high 17 minutes. His previous high was 11 in the first Boston College game, and he averaged only 6.8 minutes on the season.
That was a sensational rebound by Walker, and in my mind, and he came into the game, he set an entirely different tempo for a Connecticut team that had withered under the great pressure and were just worn out.
Chris Smith was the only Husky to finish with double figures, with 18 points. It was truly a team effort. John Thompson was impressed. Quote, "Jim Calhoun has done one of the most outstanding jobs I've ever seen in my 18 years. Their team plays with such great chemistry. I am so amazed at their chemistry." End quote. Former Norwich Bulletin UConn beat reporter Pete Abraham, who now covers the Boston Red Sox for the Boston Globe, recalls an interaction he had with Thompson in the postgame press conference.
The other thing I remember about that season is the Georgetown game in Hartford. That's when it became sort of evident that they were going to be good. And after the game, I said to John Thompson, who I really liked and who was always very nice to me, called me back all the time. And I said, Coach, what do you think about UConn? And he said, well, I knew when he was going to ask that. And why don't you ask me that again in New York? So, okay. So then we get to New York and they beat him again, you know, in the Big East tournament. So I raised my hand. I said, Coach, you told me to ask you what you think about UConn in New York. So I'm asking you. And he says, I knew one of you son of bitches was going to ask me that. And he kind of laughed and he said, they're a damn good team. And Coach was standing off to the side waiting to come up to do his post game. And that was kind of a cool moment that John Thompson, you know, who was the biggest deal in the league, you know, kind of giving UConn his impromptu, you know, or whatever. But that was a really cool moment.
When UConn defeated Georgetown at the Hartford Civic Center back on January 20th, it was considered to be the greatest win in UConn men's basketball history. Now that they've repeated the feat, but in the Big East tournament, does that make this win the greatest? Jim Calhoun. It's hard for me to rank the importance of victories, but this one was huge. People said they were waiting for us to show them something or get somewhere. Well, here we are. Hartford Current columnist Alan Greenberg summed up the feelings of UConn fans everywhere with this line from his column following the Georgetown win. Quote, by now, those of you who have been pinching yourselves each time the Huskies reach new heights are thoroughly black and blue. So stop pinching. Enjoy. End quote. Awaiting UConn on Sunday was the top-seeded Syracuse Orangemen, who dismissed Villanova 73-61 in the other semifinal matchup on Saturday. In addition to playing for the Big East tournament title, the winner would likely earn the number one seed in the East region of the NCAA tournament when the pairings were announced later Sunday evening. Like the Georgetown game on Saturday, UConn was looking to settle a score after falling to Syracuse in their previous meeting, a 90-86 loss at the Carrier Dome on February 10th. Syracuse was making their fifth consecutive trip to the championship game, and on the season, were 7-0 against teams ranked in the top 20. Dan Cerulik started in place of Rod Sellers following his knee injury the day before. However, Sellers was in uniform and available to play, which, considering how the injury looked on Saturday, was a positive development. Early on, Jim Calhoun and the Huskies must have been struck by a serious case of deja vu. In their last meeting at Syracuse, the Orange jumped out to an 11-0 start, eventually pushing the lead to 13 before the Huskies gathered themselves. The first 6 minutes of this game were eerily similar to the previous matchup. The first nine times that UConn had the ball, they failed to score. All five starters missed a shot, and they committed four turnovers. On the other side of the ball, Syracuse was having their way with the Huskies, and even after committing four turnovers of their own, the Orange were quickly up 10-0 before Calhoun called timeout at the 15:57 mark of the first half. Said Calhoun, quote, I was thinking we could be witnessing the first shutout in NCAA history. I told the guys, hey, they're pitching a shutout. We were tight as a drum. If you banged on us, you would have heard a loud sound. End quote. The Huskies responded and broke the shutout when Chris Smith hit a jumper and converted the N1 after being fouled. But Syracuse was still clicking. Up 14-5 with 14 minutes left in the half, the Orange looked to run.
George couldn't get the roll, knocked free, and here's Edwards. And they bust out again with Coleman, who can put it on the floor.
After seemingly high-fiving the entire Syracuse roster, Coleman converted his and-one, and Syracuse led 17-5. John Gwynn took note of the celebrations, recalling, oh yeah, I saw that. Yes, I did. Apparently, the UConn fans attempting to distract Syracuse players shooting free throws was too much of a distraction for Jim Boeheim and the Orangemen, leading to what may be the strangest announcement ever issued at Madison Square Garden.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we request
a blocked out at the free throw line.
The Big East has indicated that the game will be suspended.
An announcement being made.
Thank you.
To the UConn fans here behind this goal to sit down. Well, they're going to suspend the game. I don't think I've ever heard that announcement of a college basketball.
After the Coleman old-fashioned three-point play, the Huskies responded. Over the next 10.5 minutes, UConn outscored Syracuse 30-12. Just like on Saturday, the key to the Huskies' run was the play of the bench. John Gwynn came in and hit two quick baskets. Lyman DePriest had tip-ins on consecutive possessions. But the real difference maker, Terrano Walker. Walker checked in at that key 14-minute mark, and for the next 11 minutes was a force to be reckoned with. He scored 10 points, grabbed 4 rebounds, and added 2 steals for good measure. He converted both ends of a 1-1 with 5 minutes 14 seconds left in the half to give the Huskies the lead.
Now Connecticut with its first lead in the game.
Brett Walker, a 40% free throw shooter who has only been averaging 7 minutes a game, is playing in the Big East like he's an all-conference performer.
Billy off the bench today, 8 points. Quinn has 8 points off the bench, and Caprice 2 field goals. The bench has put the Huskies back into the lead of this game.
He wasn't done.
And there it is.
Walker having a career day. More points than he's ever scored, and he has picked the Big East championship game to do it. A total of 10 now in the first half off the bench for UConn. 2:05 to go in the first half. Connecticut's 38, Syracuse 33.
Walker almost, great anticipation, almost another steal. There it is.
NFL alone looking for help.
Terrano's second steal of the half led to that Smith runner to put UConn up by 7. That was the margin at halftime, with a score UConn 42, Syracuse 35. UConn's bench accounted for 22 of their 42 points, while Tate George led the Huskies with 10 points and Chris Smith 8. The 6'5" George was causing matchup issues for Syracuse and their 5'11 point guard Michael Edwards. Edwards struggled to guard George, and he was also having issues passing the ball into the low block, and specifically to Derek Holman. The UConn defense forced 14 Syracuse turnovers in the half, including 9 steals. Chris Smith kept the momentum rolling for the Huskies to start the second half, draining a 3-pointer to increase the UConn lead to 10, 45-35. But Syracuse's Tony Scott came off the bench and hit the first of his 3 second-half 3-pointers to trim the lead back to 7. The lead grew to 9 before the Orange made a serious run. Another Scott 3 finished off a 7-0 Syracuse run to make the score 49-47 UConn. Both teams traded punches, and before long, the score was tied at 57 with 8:54 left in the game. John Gwynn quickly broke the tie.
Connecticut with 4 team fouls, so neither team over the limit yet. Connecticut went over the limit early in the first half. About 8 minutes to go, they were shooting 1-1.
He's got the 3! A chance for a 4-pointer! Gwynn was fouled by Thompson, his 4th. Stevie can't believe it, and what Gwynn is doing, his follow-through is so perfect on this jump shot. Young players, watch his wrist on that shot. Sensational follow-through. That's where he got his strength, and that's where he could not be denied by the defender. Boy, that's just great stroke.
Gwynn missed the free throw, and Coleman immediately responded with a dunk and a foul. And after he made his free throw, the score was tied again at 60, with just under 8 minutes left. Over the next 6 minutes, the Huskies' lead would yo-yo between 2 and 4 points, but Syracuse would not be put away. With just under 2 minutes left, Chris Smith put UConn up by 6 from the foul line.
A year ago, Jim Calhoun brought a superstar to this tournament by the name of Cliff Robinson. Connecticut could not get the job done. He's moved on to the Portland Trailblazers. Now this year, no one single star, just a collection of outstanding role players. Given themselves a chance to win the school's first Big East championship. Only 3 schools have ever won this tournament. Syracuse, Georgetown, and St. John's. Connecticut now trying to become the 4th.
Great defense by Walker. Wouldn't let Scott get the jump shot off.
He did there. Another 3 for Scott. That is 3 for the game in the second half. And it pulls Syracuse back to within 3 points.
On the Huskies' next possession, Smith committed an offensive foul driving to the hoop, giving Syracuse the ball back with just under a minute left in the game and down by 3. With 45.8 seconds left, Tony Scott returned the favor, traveling at the top of the key and giving the Huskies the ball back with a chance to ice the game from the line. And that's exactly what Tate George did. George went 6-for-6 from the free throw line over the final 29.6 seconds.
Connecticut is 19 seconds away from his first ever Big East championship. Billy, in the preseason, one magazine wrote, if Connecticut goes anywhere, it will be back to the NIT. It will be surprising if Connecticut can climb higher than 6th in the Big East Conference. Now, Jim Calhoun and the Huskies can win the Big East tournament and wind up, and we're speculating here, but they figure to wind up with a number one seed in the upcoming NCAA tournament if they win here. It is just an unbelievable turnaround.
It really is. Biggest turnaround in Big East history.
And George will come up to the free throw line. 7.6 seconds left.
Nice sportsmanship there between Tate George and Stevie Thompson. Two seniors who have had sensational careers. Quality all the way. And just to think, this is just a conference championship. We've got 3 weeks to go.
Coach Calhoun had a great comment about this Connecticut team a few weeks ago. Looking back at the whole season, the coach said, this team has gone from peach fuzz to stubble. We got whiskers on our chin. And pretty soon, Jim Calhoun and these Huskies could have a championship on their belt.
And Brent, I like the last thing that he wrote on the blackboard yesterday after all his instruction. Believe in us. Some line. He feels it now.
This is better than crossing the finish line at the Boston Marathon for Jim Calhoun.
They cannot lose now because Syracuse cannot call another timeout even after the basket. It's over. They don't have to take the ball out of bounds.
Three counts, and it's over. UConn, in an amazing turnaround, captures the Big East tournament. Let the celebration begin.
And a great group of young kids who worked very hard, James.
I remember you from 17 years ago at Northeastern University having played against you. What was the most significant change in your coaching style till today?
I really believe that the most significant thing was the up-tempo game and the three-point shot, which I think that you have to use it today with the game.
Last question. Seton Hall was a Cinderella team last year. This year it's your team. I understand P.J. Carlissimo had some advice for you.
Regardless of what happens, he just wanted us to enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride indeed. Let's go back over to Brent Musburger.
Thank you, JB. So today it's Madison Square Garden for the Huskies of UConn. Who knows? Will it be Denver down the road? For Billy Packer and James Brown, I'm Brent Musburger. So long from the Garden. The final score, Connecticut 78, Syracuse 75.
The UConn guards led the way in scoring. Senior Tate George at 22, Chris Smith 20, and John Gwynn 16, accounting for nearly 75% of the total scoring for the Huskies. Terrena Walker was the only other Husky to reach double figures, finishing with 11 points. The Steel Curtain defense, so reliable for Calhoun throughout the season, forced 20 Syracuse turnovers and had 13 steals. Walker led a monumental effort defensively on the Big East Player of the Year, limiting Derek Coleman to only 5 shot attempts on the day. UConn assistant coach Dave Lato talks about how Terrena was prepared for his big moment in the tournament.
Yeah, so, you know, he was a guy that came from Florida and he went to Oak Hill. So he had played, you know, some pretty good competition, but his basketball maturity in his life, he was fearless. He wasn't like Scott. He wasn't like Nadav and he wasn't like Rod, but you couldn't tell him he wasn't. I mean, he thought he was at least, if not better than those guys, which it wasn't problematic. It was good because he was self-confident. And knew and understood who he was and played a good role. He knew he wasn't going to score 25 points, but banging people around, you know, throwing elbows, rebounding, running the floor, all those kind of things meant, you know, a lot to him. And so losing Rod and inserting Terrena, obviously what Rod's contribution was pretty dynamic, but he felt more than we even felt that no loss here. I got this. And he filled in admirably, as you mentioned.
Rod Sellers wasn't surprised at all by Walker's impressive performance.
It would be lineups in practice. A coach would put Big T in there, Terrena. And, you know, like, I love Big T. Like, T's my guy. That was my man. And he was so strong. Didn't say a lot in practice, but he was very intimidating because of the look, because of the strength, whatever. So we knew, like, when his number was called, he'd be ready. Like, we knew he'd be ready because he was just always, it's just how he was. That's how he was built. So, like you said, when I went down, Big T came in, man. Like, he had missed a beat. Like, he'd been playing all year. I'm like, damn, this DVDT just came in like, boom, boom, boom.
Chris Smith was named the most valuable player for the tournament, and he was joined on the all-tournament team with Tate George and John Gwynn. After cutting down the nets, the team was presented with watches for winning the tournament. But there was an issue. Here's Mark Sir.
The one thing that sticks out of my mind, and this is a funny anecdote, they were supposed to give us the watches that same night on the court, and with the Big East tournament sign, we received the watch later on. But they whispered in our ear, sorry, someone broke in the locker room there in Madison Square Garden and stole all of the watches. We have to, don't open the box, they said. So they gave us the box and we were not allowed to open the box. And we said, when we go back to Times Square, there's someone, you know, Big East watches, you know. So this was a funny side story. And we really received the watch later on then.
UConn co-captain Steve Peichel recalls the confidence the team had prior to the Big East tournament.
By that time of the season, like, we didn't think we were losing. So we had a real confidence, that team, at that point in time. And it was kind of like, after we wouldn't, you know, it was like, that's what we're supposed to do. So, you know, I've been on a few teams. I've coached a few teams like that. When you get that kind of momentum and confidence, and our fans were going crazy. We had the best fans in the world. You know, the Madison Square Garden was a home game, really, for us. And Husky Nation was there, but and proud. But yeah, we were just in a great place as a team. We really shared the basketball. Guys made the extra pass. Our defense was elite. You know, it was fun, quite honestly. And we kind of expected to win by that time of the year. I think it was just kind of a surreal feeling, especially, you know, a program that hadn't had that kind of success.
Right.
But we were confident and again, you know, ready to play. And Madison Square Garden kind of became like a Husky for the next 20 years, kind of became a home court for the Huskies.
Here's Coach Lato again on what a significant accomplishment this was for the UConn program.
You know, it was so much euphoria about going to New York and playing the Big East tournament. You know, as I said, Patrick Ewing, Pearl Washington, you know, the names go on and on and on. Do we actually belong here? And, you know, Georgetown was like, wow, we beat these guys 2 out of 3 times, given their roster and their success. I remember very specifically, we were sitting there. It was the under 8-minute timeout, I believe, and it was a tie score. And I looked up and I said to myself, we can actually win this game. We can actually become Big East champions, which, again, talk about that weekend in New York where for a fan and for college basketball or participants, those 9 teams was huge for everything, recruiting, success, and all of that. And then to be able to finish the deal off was tremendous. I always remember Tate being at the free throw line when the game was kind of in hand, and John Gwynn dancing and prancing at half court. And it showed itself on TV like that too, was the culmination of, you know, for us as coaches, you know, from 86 till the spring of 90, it was like, wow, we've kind of really did it. And the journey of the regular season championship means a ton. And it was, but at that time, the Big East tournament, because of its stature, meant everything. And so to win the regular season and the Big East tournament was just mind-boggling.
UConn's former longtime senior associate director of athletic communications, Mike Enright, on how the weekend in New York announced the arrival of the program to the rest of the country.
Well, the Big East tournament was the national coming out party, because as successful as the season was, a lot of teams have great regular seasons. And there were a lot of fun moments for UConn fans during that regular season. And people started noticing, and the national media started noticing, but Coach Calhoun used the line. We were off Broadway. We were playing regional theater at the time. And now we were going to Broadway. And if we had lost in the first or second round and semifinals, even if we had gone to the final 8 a few weeks later, the magic of the season would not have been the same. And it was, to this day, I don't know if there's another coach in the history of the Big East, where the Big East tournament means as much as it does to Jim Calhoun. I've been to a million press conferences after Big East tournament games, and I've heard the coach and the players say after a loss, it's okay, the real tournament begins next week. I can guarantee you 100,000% Jim Calhoun or UConn players were never in that group. The Big East tournament meant the world to Jim Calhoun. And I think a lot of it because in 1990, the nation discovered UConn because of the Big East tournament. College basketball fans knew about us, but all of a sudden now WFAN, which was, you know, really at its height of pop, you know, if you made WFAN, that was it. And all of a sudden Mike Francesa and Russo are talking about us. The New York Times is there, papers from around the country. All of a sudden, that was the coming out party. I mean, if you follow college basketball that year, you knew about UConn. If you were just a casual college basketball fan or the general sports fan, you found out about UConn during the Big East tournament. And I think that spirit still exists today in the excitement of going back to the Big East tournament. I mean, the Big East tournament means a lot to UConn fans. And I would argue it means more to UConn fans than any other school in the league. I'll just say it. And I think, you know, Ray going down the court against Georgetown and Cardiac Kemba, those moments, those kind of thoughts in your mind all start with the 1990 team that, you know, here we are, world. And that's to me what the 1990 Big East tournament, here we are, world. This regular season was not a fluke. Here we are. And Georgetown, St. John's, Syracuse, there's another member of the club.
Pete Abraham concurs.
The Garden was such a magical place, and the Big East tournament was such a great event. And I mean, back then, the Big East, you know, it's not like it is now where you got, you know, Creighton, all of these teams that nobody knows anything about. Back then, like, and the players then largely stayed for 4 years. So you could, you know, you watch guys grow up. And as a writer covering Connecticut, I knew, you know, the assistant coaches on all the teams. And I, you know, I knew a lot about the players, and I had a, you know, pretty good relationship with the coaches and stuff. And so to, you know, to see them succeed at Madison Square Garden and, you know, raise the trophy, cut down the nets, and the fans are all excited and everything. And the bars were full of UConn fans, and you could hear "Let's go Huskies" out on 34th Street. You know, that was all so new. And I remember thinking, like, boy, the NIT is nothing compared to this. Like, you know, the NIT was a fun little deal, but this is really cool. This is like, you know, you've kind of made it now when you could come to New York and win that. And, you know, they had to earn it. I mean, they didn't, you know, there were no upsets that set it up for them. They had to beat Georgetown and Syracuse, and they beat Georgetown and Syracuse.
Finally, Jim Calhoun.
Yeah, well, it was getting the back-to-back wins on that given day. And I still, of all things, as we're getting now, quote, Big East champs, and the confetti, people start jumping around. And, you know, sometimes you have tangible days, but it's a tangible moment because you get up and shake hands with fellow coaches and hug each other and all that 4 years of incredibly hard work. And maybe with some of the doomsayers who didn't think we could get there that quick, we did because the kids believed and the kids did things that most people would just be happy to have in a game, never mind a season. And they pulled that off by winning a very, very special tournament for us. And to beat those teams back-to-back, Georgetown Syracuse, is to us awfully special.
Coming up on the next episode of the Dream Season podcast, the Huskies are back in the NCAA tournament for the first time in 11 years, but in a very familiar location. The Dream Season podcast is researched, written, and produced by me, Matt Edwards. Written sources for this episode are the Hartford Courant Archives and the Norwich Bulletin. Audio content is from interviews that I conducted and YouTube. You can connect with the show via Twitter and Instagram at Dream Season Pod. If you have any memories to share about anything I just mentioned, want to correct me on something I screwed up, or just have general feedback to give, send me an email at dreamseasonpod@gmail.com or call and leave me a message at 903-884-8990. After I'm done with the regular episodes of the show, I'd love to have at least one episode that consists entirely of your memories of the Dream Season. Either leave a message at the above number or email me with an audio recording of your recollections, along with your name and location, and I will include them in that episode. As always, thank you so much for listening.